Our next case is Weber v. County of Henrico. And of course, I'll ask counsel if you've had the opportunity to sign in. Have you done it?
Yes,
terrific. Ma'am. Thank you. And Mr. Thomas, would you like to reserve some time for rebuttal, sir?
I would, Your Honor.
Okay.
4 minutes, please.
Okay. 4 minutes.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Norman Thomas. I represent Mr. Alan D. Weber and his appeal from contempt citations in Henrico County. I want to begin, actually, with a reference to the appendix, and that would be page 158. Of the joint appendix, where Mr. Gale, who represented Mr. Weber in the trial court, states to the trial court on April the 28th, early on in that hearing, but I would also argue that motion for show cause that we are here on references the front and side yards. All in the past, when he had been in compliance, this was the condition of the property, end quote. From that point forward, Mr. Gale attempted to limit the scope of the proceedings to what the original show cause of these proceedings notified Mr. Weber, the front and side yards and a prohibition against junk storage. Now, the county responded to that argument at pages 175 and 176, where the county attorney indicated, I recognize that in the original motion for show cause, and then went on to say that it mentioned the front and side yards because that's all we could see at the time. We expected Mr. Weber would not clean up the backyard or would remove the items from the front and side yards into the backyard.
But don't the order, prior orders of the court reference requiring him to maintain his property in compliance with the zoning ordinances, not specifically the front and side yards?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
And that's in the general sense.
Right.
But specifically, when we came forward on this show cause proceeding, they told him what the problem was. If you look back at the affidavit that was supporting the original show cause motion, that came about on June 30th of 2016. That specified that the county was alleging in this instance that there was junk storage in the front and side yards. They did not mention anything else. And I want to make the general point here because this pattern repeats itself, and I want to go into that with the court, but the overview is important here. Every time Mr. Weber went to court April 7th, 2017, April 28th, and then again on June the 9th. He was held in contempt for something new and different under the zoning ordinance that was never mentioned in the show cause. And it placed him in a position to try to anticipate, not abate, but anticipate what they were going to claim next in order to have him held in contempt.
When you say he was held in contempt for something different, you mean because the property or junk, however you want to call it, was in the backyard, not the side yard.
Let me give you the examples. On April the 7th, this was coming off of an April 25th, 2016 order, mm-hmm. finding him in compliance. They continued it out for 6 months to see how things were going to go. All right, so there's no specific direction in that October 25th, 2016 order. Doesn't tell him to do anything. He's in compliance. So he gets there on April the 7th, and yes, they did bring up junk storage in the front and side yards, but they also brought up, and this is in the order of April the 11th, that he had an overweight truck parked on the property. All right, the show cause said nothing about that. So then we move forward to April the 28th. Well, on April the 28th, for the first time ever, he's held in contempt for having junk storage in the rear yard. Now, the show cause didn't say anything about that, and the judge's order entered on April the 11th, right after the April 7th hearing, didn't say abate conditions in the backyard.
Okay.
Can I ask
it just said abate all zoning violations.
Pictures in the appendix, of course, there are a number of them, but some would seem to indicate not only the aerial ones, but the ones taken from the street, that while the front yard may have been cleaned, there's a bit of a debate about where the backyard ends and the side yard begins, because you can still see, junk that is in the side yard or the backyard, but you can see it. And so if the concern is this is a zoning violation, affects property values, et cetera, that's part of the argument. If it can be seen from there, why would that not be essentially the side yard and not the backyard?
They committed themselves at page 147 of the appendix on that. The zoning inspector, not the administrator, but the inspector, Atkinson, was testifying at the April 28th hearing. And Mr. Gale said, if the backyard looked like the front and side yard does now, would the whole property be in compliance? And he said, yes. So their interpretation, and if you look at that in context, their interpretation of the front and side yard is that which is visible from the street, not that which is behind the fence. And that's been their consistent interpretation. But to answer your question directly, the inspector committed them at that point in time on page 147 that if the back, what's behind the fence, looked like what's in front of the fence, then he'd be fine. Now, pages 139 and 40 are Mr. Weber's pictures. They are better in the original record than they turned out in the appendix, and I would commend it to you in the original record. But particularly one of them shows front yard, side yard that you can see from the street, clean and green. There's nothing in there. And that was the pictures, or those were the pictures, that Mr. Atkinson was referring to on page 147 of the appendix, which was during the April the 28th hearing. And Judge O'Brien, I want to go back again to what happened on June the 9th, because the order of April the 28th, or that followed the April 28th hearing, which was the May 12th order, again, just said, and the judge had said it specifically on pages 181 through 82, that all means all. The whole zoning ordinance means the whole zoning ordinance.
Which could arguably be all of his property as well.
Everything.
Okay.
Now, but he has to be told to an express command to abate something. He has to have specific directions. The cases of this court in the past have said there has to be an express command. It can't be implicit. And our position is, especially with some of the more recent case law, is that it can't be a matter that, well, we all know what the judge meant. It has to be an express command, not one that's implied. And on that particular point, Chief Judge Huff wrote an opinion in Washington v. Commonwealth. I go back to Wilson versus Collins, 27 Virginia Appeal 411. And on pages 424 and 25, when they talk about the definite terms as to the duties imposed being express, not implied, they carry it one step further and say, the duty imposed may not be implicit in the trial court's order. Now, on June the 9th, Mr. Weber goes to court, and for the first time ever, they introduce, well, he's keeping materials in the back that we can see from the air. We're not sure what they are. We're not sure if they're junk or not. But it's inconsistent with residential use. And so he was held in contempt for that. And, Your Honor, what it means is this. Every time he goes, he's held under the statute that anything under the code that the inspector can find from one time to the next, you're being held responsible for. That's not an express command. It's the amorphous whole of the zoning ordinance. And he doesn't know where to turn. If they'd gone back on July the 15th, it could have been for a fence height violation. It could have been for a setback violation.
So your argument is not that this was not junk as is alluded to in the statute, but that he wasn't on notice of the condition in which he was supposed to specifically keep his property.
Yes. Okay. And in addition to that, that there were no express commands other than the original show cause order, which talked about the front and side yards, that he was to abate so as to purge any contempt or to abate conditions that if he failed to do so, he would be held in contempt. He was left to guess from one time to the next, what's the next thing that the county's going to bring forward to the judge, and he'd be held in contempt for that. I do want to speak to assignment of error number three, which basically says when we look at the front and side yards, he has repeatedly demonstrated that he complied with the order for no junk storage there, that he met the merits of the show cause for which he did have notice, for which there was a proper express command, and on October 25th, 2016, on April the 28th, and then again on June the 9th, when he testified he had taken all the material out of the front and side yards, that he had staged some things there, which the zoning inspector corroborated between one court appearance and the next, as he moved them out, sold them, took them to the dump, whatever he did with them, the various materials, it was clean, and the county didn't counter that. They didn't have an inspector who'd gone by there a day or two before to have a pre-court inspection. They'd only been there some days earlier.
You're into your rebuttal,
yes,
and
I'm
happy to hear from you, but if you want to save it for
just
rebuttal.
Want to make this point, and then I'll reserve the rest of my
sure.
time. His testimony was unrebutted. The county raises the issue in their brief that, well, the judge might have thought he was a liar. But really, when he's bringing forward to show cause why he should not be held in contempt, when he gives sworn testimony that I've cleaned it all up, well, they have to go forward with a preponderance of the evidence to show that he hasn't. At that point, their burden is to go forward with the evidence, and they failed to do that. And I'll reserve the rest
okay.
of my time.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is John McChesney. I'm here on behalf of Henrico County to ask you to affirm the rulings of the trial court with regard to this civil contempt proceeding. I'm a bit surprised or taken aback that this argument is that Mr. Weber had no notice of what he was supposed to do. The county of Henrico has been dealing with Mr. Weber since 2005, as I believe the record demonstrates, both in criminal prosecutions, in general district court, some of which were appealed to circuit court, and then in this civil injunction, which was initiated in 2007 and has been going on periodically since then. I believe the record is replete with evidence that Mr. Weber knows that he needs to get junk storage out of his entire yard, and the notice to him is not an issue. With specific regard to assignment of error number one, I have made an argument that Mr. Weber and his counsel did not make a proper contemporaneous objection to that. I do acknowledge, as Mr. Thomas noted in his argument, that the issue of what the motion said was brought to the court's attention. But the two bases for the idea that the notice was insufficient, that is to say the due process clause of the Constitution and Title 15.2 of the Virginia Code, were never discussed at the trial level. This is the first time we have had this argument that Mr. Weber's due process rights were violated somehow in this proceeding. And that is improper under the contemporaneous objection rule. In my brief, I cited a case called, I think it's Corsero v. Commonwealth, where the court basically said an objection to hearsay can't be transformed into an objection to the confrontation clause on appeal. Here, I'm not even sure what the hearsay equivalent is because this issue was raised so weakly and meekly at the trial level, but certainly we never talked about the due process clause. We never talked about Title 15.2 of the code in this sense. Furthermore, on the substance, there is a glaring hole in Mr. Thomas's argument, which is he never puts forth any authority for the proposition that the due process clause required the motion to show cause to be amended or the most recent order for rule to show cause to be amended. As you all know from the authority cited in both parties' briefs, the due process clause is flexible. It depends on context. In this case, I think, it's clear that as of the April 28th hearing, Mr. Weber knew he needed to clean up his backyard. We don't have a transcript from the April 7th hearing, but we do discuss that hearing. I discussed that hearing at the next hearing and talked about the fact that the parties had addressed this at April 7th. Mr. Weber, as I recall, had indicated that he would move the junk in his front yard to his backyard, and we said, no, that's not sufficient. You can't do that. And there was no objection to that. There was no indication that the due process clause required us to amend anything at that point. But that discussion was had, and Mr. Weber was apprised of the fact that he needed to clean up his backyard as well as his front yard. And as Your Honor, Judge O'Brien has pointed out, the order that came out of that April 7 hearing, which is the April 11 order, did not specify the front and side yard. It said clean up the whole property. It referenced junk storage specifically, referenced the code sections relating to junk storage from the county ordinance, and said abate the violations, clean up the yard.
So is that why you made the statement you just made that he may not have known on April 7th, but he knew on April 28th that he had to clean up the backyard?
I don't know that.
Was that an April 11th order, or?
I don't know that I would concede that he didn't know that on April 7th, but certainly by April 28th, when the court is specifically looking at the backyard and we have the aerial photographs, Mr. Weber knows or is on notice under that satisfies the due process clause that he should.
The April 11th order.
At the April 11th order tells him to clean up his entire property, or tells him to clean up his property without reservation or condition or qualification, and then also the discussion that's reflected in the record from the next hearing about what was said orally. That is sufficient under the flexible requirements of the due process clause to apprise him of that. Title 15.2, there is an administrative process, but as I've argued in the brief, I don't see any reason why the court cannot use its inherent power to find someone in contempt, why it would have to defer to the Board of Zoning Appeals and await the outcome of this administrative process.
Does his defense, if you would, that he was staging some of this property hold any water? As opposed to
no, Your Honor. And that's really assignment of error number three. That's if you get past assignments of error number one and two, which I think you have to do to get to assignment of error number three. And if you have to accept the argument that there was a proper objection made, that the scope should have been limited to the front and side yards, and you're only looking at that, which candidly, I was not arguing that at those hearings because I did not feel I needed to argue specifically about the front and side yards. I was looking at the property as a whole, and there clearly was junk in the backyard, and I believe it's conceded by Mr. Weber's counsel at this point that if you consider the backyard, clearly he was in contempt. But my argument on the staging specifically is, and I don't believe Mr. Blankenship's testimony contradicts that, if he's putting a different piece of junk in the yard every day to move it off the property, that's still junk storage. The identity of the specific item may be changing, but if he's staging it there, he's leaving one item there for 3 days, moving it off and replacing it with another item, that still is junk storage, and he still should have the property cleaned up. With regard to assignment of error number two, which is the argument that that Mr. Weber was found in contempt on the basis of orders that were not definite enough in the way they placed a burden or duty on him, a duty to do something or to refrain from doing something, I think it's important to concentrate on what orders he was actually found to have violated. I find it interesting that in the body of assignment of error number two, Mr. Weber's counsel cites four specific orders as the ones that aren't specific enough with regard to the burden placed on him. First of all, what's interesting about that is at the back end, the June 28 order, even if that were in specific, he's never been found to have violated that order because the notice of appeal came right after that hearing and that order was entered. The first order is the October 2016 order, which doesn't command him to do anything. It's simply a continuance order, keeping the which I don't believe was objected to, keeping the matter on the court's docket and setting a hearing 6 months later in April. So the only two orders that could have been insufficient in their definiteness are the April 28 order and I believe the May 11 order. The trial court did not find Mr. Weber in contempt specifically for violating those orders and only for violating those orders. The motion for show cause referenced three orders in the past from December 2007 and then two orders from 2012. That's what the basis for the motion to show cause was. And I find it interesting that Mr. Thomas focuses so much on what the motion says with regard to assignment of error number one, but then doesn't pay attention to what it says with regard to assignment of error number two. Those orders that I just mentioned, that are actually mentioned, would be the most relevant ones if there was a lack of definiteness in the burden placed on Mr. Weber.
But I'm sorry, which orders would be the most relevant?
December 2007, February 2012, and October 2012. And those order him to abate all zoning violations on his property. There's no argument made in the brief or anywhere else that those orders are insufficiently definite. So I think that resolves that entire assignment of error in part because the orders, those two middle orders, while they don't specifically reference those orders, they don't specifically reference themselves either or the immediate prior order either. Again, there's ample evidence in the record. There are ample orders in the record ordering Mr. Weber to clean up his property, and those are the orders that place a definite burden on him. Next, I would point out something interesting in Mr. Thomas's brief that I did not maybe respond to as forcefully as I should have in my own brief, which is that Mr. Thomas lauds an order from March 2013, which is on page 85 and 86 of the joint appendix, as being an exemplary order of the type that should have been entered in April and May of 2017. What's interesting is that order does not place any greater burden on Mr. Weber than the orders he's complaining about now do. That order, again, on 85 of the appendix, just says, Mr. Weber shall abate the zoning violations on his property by no later than March 22nd, 2013. And then goes on to talk about sanctions, and then places a burden on the county to advise Mr. Weber and offers Mr. Weber the opportunity to extend a written invitation to the county to come on the property and help him. And those last two sections are what Mr. Thomas finds so admirable about this order. That has nothing to do with the burden placed on Mr. Weber. That's a burden placed on the county. This order, if this order is a good order and puts sufficiently definite burden on Mr. Weber, then the orders of May 11 and April 11, I think, and May 12, 2017, also are good orders. And again, I would return just briefly to the fact that there's a contemporaneous objection problem with regard to that, and I take particular umbrage with the latter two orders being included, the May 12 order and the June 28 order, because as the record reflects, those were drafted with the participation of Mr. Weber's counsel. And at no point did Mr. Weber's counsel suggest, hey, why don't you put some provisions in the order, like on page 85 of the appendix, and that'll make the order sufficient. The objections in this case are to what was set in the record. There's nothing in the record in any of these transcripts that faults the definiteness of the orders. Admittedly, Mr. Weber and his counsel express confusion about what junk storage is, but they're talking about the code. They're not talking about the orders in question. Lastly, I would just talk briefly about assignment of error number four. Mr. Thomas, in his reply brief, cited a case called Mason for the proposition that no objection was required here. That case is not really relevant here. That was a situation where a trial judge said something in front of the jury before someone could object. Here we had a bench trial. There was ample opportunity for Mr. Weber's trial counsel to make an objection if indeed it was objectionable. I would also argue that it was harmless error. What Mr. Weber said did not help him. And if you look at the transcript, I think you'll see that. He's not offering an equivocal yes to the idea that he will let the zoning administrator or the zoning official come to his property and help him figure out what junk is and what junk isn't. The fact that that was struck did not affect the outcome. And specifically, if you take a look at page 228 and 229 of the appendix, which includes the entirety of the judge's ruling, contrary to what's said in the reply brief, he does not mention Mr. Blankenship or his testimony. He does discuss Mr. Blankenship later when there's a discussion about when to hold the next hearing, but it's not a part of his finding of contempt. Lastly, I want to address something that was in the reply brief where it appeared that Mr. Weber or Mr. Thomas was making an argument about whether this was an appealable order. The county does not contest the idea that this is an appealable order and that this was that the appeal was appropriately brought at this time. Our only argument with regard to what we would like you to do is we would like you to affirm what has happened before and remand the case so that Judge Wallerstein in Henrico County can pick up where he left off in the summer of 2017. As you'll note in the record, the notice of appeal was filed the day before the next scheduled hearing, and we just need to return to that process and hopefully wrap this up.
So you're asking us to affirm the finding of contempt, remand for any future proceedings that the Circuit Court feels is appropriate.
Exactly, Your Honor.
And that the June 28, 2017 order is certainly an appealable order then?
Yes, it is. As I understand,
it's a final order for our purposes now.
Yes, Your Honor. As I understand the case law, the someone who's found in contempt can either appeal the intermediate order or wait until the end. And so this is proper.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Thomas, sir.
Mr. Weber asserts that one cannot be called forward to court to show cause on one ground and be held in contempt on a different ground. It's an abuse of discretion for a trial court to hold him in contempt under such circumstances, and that's exactly what happened to Mr. Weber.
What are you asking us to do in this case?
To reverse the trial court's judgment, to vacate the findings of contempt, and to dismiss the show cause, because Mr. Weber has shown that he cleaned up the front and side yards as the original show cause indicated that he must do. I want to mention something else. All those prior orders from 2012 and what have you, if you go back and you look at the affidavits that supported those orders, they were talking about the front and side yard. And I think one of them talked also, in addition, about the truck, which, of course, did not come back up in June. Also, the reason I started out with page 158 of the appendix, that's where Mr. Gale, in addition to asserting, as he had done at page 148 and then multiple times thereafter, that Mr. Weber was in compliance, that he believed he was in compliance, that the county responded directly, meaning they understood that Mr. Weber was trying, through Mr. Gale's objections, to confine this to a show cause for the front and side yards. So 175, 176, they directly responded to that argument. And then on page 181 and 182, the judge understood it too and rejected it out of hand. So this is a situation that certainly complies with the court's case law that preservation of error, Rule 5A18, and here I do cite Washington v. Commonwealth, is an unpublished opinion from 2017, written by Judge Huff, Chief Judge Huff, and Judge Beals, I believe you were involved in that, that the primary function is to make sure the trial court understands what is your position and to have an opportunity to rule on it. And once that minimum requirement is met, 5A18 is not an impediment to appealing on that issue. And if you go through this record over and over again, Mr. Gale continually asserted we're in compliance and utilized the moving target analysis to show that they kept changing the basis on which they were seeking to hold him in contempt in a cumulative way, going from the front and side yard to then the truck, then the rear yard, then out of the clear blue sky, that he's storing materials, regardless of their nature, whether or not they were junk, inconsistent with residential use. That's a whole different section of the zoning ordinance. He had no command through any order that he had to abate those things. Now, staging is not storage. I want to make that point with my last few seconds. If it was, then the process of abatement itself would be contemptuous. One needs to stage to purge. My time is up.
Thank
we ask that you reverse this judgment. And we did ask for alternative relief as well in our brief.
Thank you so much. We'll come down and greet counsel.
All rise.